You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Up next, we have Green Party's Chloe Swarbrick, of course, talking about the cannabis referendum and all the things that were announced, trying to make a bit of sense out of what has been announced, what it is, what it means, what the National Party says has been announced, what they say, what they mean, what the differences between criminalization, legalization, decriminalization, the benefits of each of one of those, and yeah, about what will be, what the referendum will be on, and what the referendum can actually do. So we started by kind of asking what is going on. It was announced that the government will offer voters a yes-no decision based on the draft cannabis legalization legislation at the next election. A, what does this mean? And B, what other options were there that were considered for this referendum?
Yeah, so what this means is that for the first time in over 40 years, New Zealanders will have an opportunity to basically see politicians stop sitting on their hands and actually enact some common sense cannabis regulation and therefore legalisation. And that'll mean that we'll be addressing not just the issue of people who are using, which would be what you'd be addressing if you were going simply through the decriminalisation route, but also addressing issues of supply and production. So we've taken a really common sense, evidence-based approach here that folds in elements of social justice. And as the conversation evolves, we will absolutely be taking into consideration, but also honouring Te Tiriti o Waitangi. So there's going to be extensive stakeholder negotiation. What all of that means in practice is that well ahead of the 2020 general election, towards the end of next year, New Zealanders will be presented with a detailed piece of legislation. All three parties in government have confirmed that we will be bound to implementing that legislation with a yes majority vote. The opposition has yet to say whether they will do the same, so I think it's pretty incumbent on them to say whether they will or will not be bound by a majority yes vote from the New Zealand public. But, you know, there's been a lot of confusion around the use of the term binding. We in New Zealand don't have a supreme codified constitution, so essentially every parliament is sovereign unto itself, and current parliaments can't bind future parliaments. A lot of people confuse the term binding with self-executing. So speaking to the other options, which is the other part of your question, self-execution was an option that the Green Party had, you know, were on the public record as advocating for it. Basically, self-execution would be a process whereby we pass legislation through all of the stages in Parliament and it triggered immediately with a positive yes vote. There is next to no real changes in terms of how the public will interact with the referendum, given that there will still be all of that detail prior to the election, and also because there is that commitment to implement it. So therefore, it is morally incumbent and binding on the parties of government.
Taking off from there, you've mentioned both the opposition party and whether it's binding, two questions which I was going to ask. The National Party deputy, Paula Bennett, has had a lot to say on this issue as the Shadow Minister for Drugs.
Yeah.
One thing that I think would be interesting to clarify for the listeners is her noting of how every option considered, quote, takes us straight to legalization instead of decriminalization, whereas many other countries consider decriminalization first before leaping straight into legalization, end quote. Is this true that this is what would happen with the referendum, and why have we gone to legalization rather than decriminalization, and what is actually the difference between the two?
Basically, be described as a spectrum. On the very far end of things, you've essentially got prohibition, which is complete kind of black market underground control, as we've seen in New Zealand. Despite there being prohibition on all illicit substances for the past 40 years, we've seen an increase in harm. You can correlate this to 16 years ago when we reclassified methamphetamine as a Class A substance under that prohibition and life imprisonment as a penalty. We have seen harm massively increase. We've seen deaths. We've seen gang control and associated violence. Same with pretty much every illicit substance under the sun. Cannabis is a fascinating one because on the harm scale, obviously, when you consider it against substances like alcohol, it doesn't have the same level of toxicity nor addictive qualities. But basically, to the point, you know, that Paul has been trying to raise, I really call them out on this, and to be perfectly honest with you, I'm pretty bloody fed up. They're really trying to play a game of obfuscation in terms of confusing the New Zealand public. They've refused to engage with us on any meaningful level. I went and approached Paula and Simon in the House a few months ago, and I've had a ton of correspondence with Paula Bennett's office inviting them to work with me to develop this legislation, and they refused to work with me because I'm a quote-unquote backbench MP. And this bizarre obsession that they've got with power and status really speaks to the fact that they're not at all concerned with efficacy or implementing anything practical. So in terms of the decrim versus legalisation question, if we were simply to decriminalise, which many police would argue we actually already currently have on an ad hoc basis on the front lines, all we would be doing is not criminalising users. There is still a massive issue there in terms of not addressing the issues of supply, nor of production or cultivation. So basically, people would be not penalised for having cannabis, but people would still be penalised for growing cannabis, and we would still be enabling a black market. Legalisation tackles those issues of supply, cultivation and production. It basically says this is going to be the legal framework and the regulation for how that is going to happen, and it therefore also takes up market space that's currently being held and controlled by the black market, which means that we run the black market out of town, we run that gang control out of town, and we end up with something that is far actually less accessible to kids. We're also enabled to put out, you know, educative campaigns that actually speak to the real harms when it comes to cannabis, not some kind of bizarre fear-mongering campaign that when kids, you know, as we know, based on the evidence, most New Zealanders will try cannabis by the time they're out of high school, typically around the age of 15 or 16. If we've, you know, educated them up with some kind of fear or concern that if they do try cannabis, they'll die, and that doesn't happen, all of a sudden it breeds a sense of skepticism about all of the other things that adults or lawmakers have lied about. So this is basically just evidence-based, practical legislation that finds that balance around protecting kids, making sure that we reduce harm and we reduce that black market control.
First of all, you mentioned there about a kind of minimum age or restricting who has access to this, and also education. These have been listed as things that would or are part of the draft legislation. What are three regulations or commercial supply controls, is one of the terms that's being used, that you would like to see included in this legislation or that are currently in it, and why has the minimum age been set at 20?
So the minimum age has been set at 20 because ultimately we have to find a balance between a whole raft of variables. Essentially, you know, as I can guarantee you in my position as a lawmaker and as a representative of people, you're never going to be able to satisfy everybody because there are always those compromises, those trade-offs that you have to make among variables like autonomy, personal responsibility, protecting people, minimising harm. So what we've decided to do in terms of setting the age at 20 is realising that as soon as we create this legal market, we are letting a genie out of the bottle. And basically we want to start at one of the more restrictive ends as possible. We have evidence that shows that any substance use, whether it is cannabis, alcohol, tobacco or otherwise, can impact a developing brain. You know, multiple decades ago, we decided to set the age of alcohol at 18. Some would argue that that's far too low. With cannabis, we're starting at the age of 20. That trades off against the fact that we do not want to enable a black market for those up to the age of 25. So we're again trying to find and strike that balance. In terms of other details, purchase, you know, we've put it out there in our press release, and it's also in the cabinet paper, which has been released to the public today. Purchase will be limited and legal only on a licensed premises from a licensed and registered retailer. And importantly as well, we're actually folding in private cultivation to being regulated in a similar way to how people, for example, currently homebrew beer. The reason that we've decided to deal with the reality of personal cultivation, or as I'm sure you'll hear it you know, called by the likes of Family First and the Nats, home grow, is because we, again, want to ensure that we are not just enabling a black market, but that there is openness and transparency in any form of regulatory system that we create, but also it's a matter of social justice. speaking extensively to the officials and the campaigners who were involved in the Washington debate around legalisation of cannabis. One of their biggest regrets is that they didn't allow for that personal cultivation, because it's meant that there is still a lot of this stuff that's happening in the shadows. But so too, you know, we've said that stuff around the Pesticides of 20, but one of the really important things for me is also limiting the places where people can consume, so that we don't, you know, end up with some kind of increase in accessibility or availability or promotion of it as a cool or hip thing to do. So people will be only able to consume cannabis on a private property or in a licensed premise. You know, you can think of cafes or special safe consumption spaces that exist in other jurisdictions. But also, we're clamping down on advertising. There will be absolutely no advertising. Basically, the gist of this is that we don't want to just replace a black market with massive corporate control. Thankfully, you know, one of the perverse things about the fact that cannabis is currently illegal under the 1962 Convention from Vienna internationally is that it's not included in any free trade agreements, which means that we can create a pretty protected national kind of economy around cannabis, which means that we can incentivize more, you know, iwi growers or social enterprise and lock out that big money from big tobacco overseas.
The Wire.
Sitting on the beach watching transnational criminal scum neoliberal filth.
USA, James Ransted talking about peaky mental health and the kind of youth mental health crisis as it has been branded in national politics. Up next we have Green Party's Chloe Swarbrick, of course, talking about the cannabis referendum and all the things that were announced, trying to make a bit of sense out of what has been announced, what it is, what it means, what the National Party says has been announced, what they say, what they mean, what the differences between criminalization, legalization, decriminalization, the benefits of each of one of those, and yeah, about what will be, what the referendum will be on, and what the referendum can actually do. Yeah, so we started by kind of asking what is going on. It was announced that the government will offer voters a yes-no decision based on the draft cannabis legalization legislation at the next election. A, what does this mean? And B, what other options were there that were considered for this referendum?
Yeah, so what this means is that for the first time in over 40 years, New Zealanders will have an opportunity to basically see politicians stop sitting on their hands and actually enact some common sense cannabis regulation and therefore legalisation. And that'll mean that we'll be addressing not just the issue of people who are using, which would be what you'd be addressing if you were going simply through the decriminalisation route, but also addressing issues of supply and production. So we've taken a really common sense, evidence-based approach here that folds in elements of social justice. And as the conversation evolves, we will absolutely be taking into consideration also honouring Te Tiriti o Waitangi. So there's going to be extensive stakeholder negotiation. What all of that means in practice is that well ahead of the 2020 general election, towards the end of next year, New Zealanders will be presented with a detailed piece of legislation. All three parties in government have confirmed that we will be bound to implementing that legislation with a yes majority vote. The opposition has yet to say whether they will do the same, so I think it's pretty incumbent on them to say whether they will or will not be bound by a majority yes vote from the New Zealand public. But, you know, there's been a lot of confusion around the use of the term binding. We in New Zealand don't have a supreme codified constitution, so essentially every parliament is sovereign unto itself, and current parliaments can't bind future parliaments. A lot of people confuse the term binding with self-executing. So speaking to the other options, which is the other part of your question, self-execution was an option that the Green Party had, you know, were on the public record as advocating for it. Basically, self-execution would be a process whereby we pass legislation through all of the stages in Parliament and it triggered immediately with a positive yes vote. There is next to no real changes in terms of how the public will interact with the referendum, given that there will still be all of that detail prior to the election, and also because there is that commitment to implement it. So therefore, it is morally incumbent and binding on the party parties of government.
Taking off from there, you've mentioned both the opposition party and whether it's binding, two questions which I was going to ask. The National Party deputy, Paula Bennett, has had a lot to say on this issue as the Shadow Minister for Drugs.
Yeah.
One thing that I think would be interesting to clarify for the listeners is her noting of how every option considered, quote, takes us straight to legalization instead of decriminalization, whereas many other countries consider decriminalization first before leaping straight into legalization, end quote. Is this true that this is what would happen with the referendum? And why have we gone to legalization rather than decriminalization? And what is actually the difference between the two?